views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
I know that two of the biggest personal collections are rumored to be owned by Mark Hamill and Method Man, because they've had an online friendly feud with each other for a few years.
That is amazing. Mark Hamill so and Method good. Man, come on.
Right?
And that's so awesome.
Personal collections of D&D stuff?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Comic books. That was
comic books.
Okay.
Yeah.
Comic books. Okay.
They might roll, but I don't know.
No, but I mean, I do love hearing about celebrities that are way dorkier than they come off when we're watching them in film doing action sequences.
Yeah, Henry Cavill, I mean, he's real life geek. I mean, huge comic book collection, reads sci-fi, is Superman, you know, Geralt of Rivia.
And everybody knows about Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel, yeah.
You think Henry Cavill being that big of a fan would have stopped Justice League? Anyway.
Right? Okay. Also, there's Michael B. Jordan is a huge anime nerd, to the point where his outfit as Killmonger in Black Panther was clearly inspired by one of the Dragon Ball Z characters. That's got to be great to be such an anime nerd that you have suggestions for your costume and you can totally just like giggle to yourself as you're looking at it as a live action representation of a Dragon Ball Z character.
Yeah, I think it's only great if you're rich and sexy. Otherwise, it's socially awkward. But yeah, yeah.
Very good point.
Otherwise, you're that guy that's at a convention with the silk Dragon Ball Z button-up shirt, you know, that's like two sizes too big and it's draped down near the knees.
Yeah, that's my target selling market, dude. Okay. Don't crap. They pay my mortgage.
Right?
Doesn't count unless you can see their Audi belly button, huh?
Yep, exactly. But now there are actors and actresses that have been in geeky properties that aren't exactly nerds until they get the property. You know, like there's training camps that a lot of these actors have to go through to understand the material that they're working with, whether it be training camps to learn like martial arts for the thing, or like for example in WandaVision, Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen had to go to a 2-week sitcom camp where they watched a shit ton of sitcoms from different decades and got quizzed on it like homework and like acted out and talked about like vocal inflections based on the decade for 2 weeks. Had to live basically a sitcom boot camp.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, even if you think about how much, like, I know Trey mentioned before we started recording, he watched a lot, and you know, I watched, it was they had the TV Land Summers where they had the whole marathons of, like, all these old shows, and I used to watch the shit of those, but I don't think I could just come out of the gate and just start acting like Dick Van Dyke or Mary Tyler Moore or, you know, the Brady Bunch parents. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I could just do that, even though I've seen those shows and know them heart by heart.
I've seen every episode of I Love Lucy probably 5 times, you know. That's just part of growing up. But that's got to be interesting to be training people to act out sitcom styles from different decades and then seeing it on screen where every episode is a different decade. That was a thing that it actually kind of polarized the audience for the first couple episodes, at least, of WandaVision. Was there was people blown up on the internet that this is boring, this is stupid, and other people being like, come on, hold on. You know that stuff is going to happen.
All right, Patrick Willems is a big movie YouTube dude. Anyway, he was completely thrown off by the first 3 episodes because he hadn't seen any of the like Nick at Night stuff related to the first episode, second episode, or the third episode.
Oh, geez.
So he had no idea what was going on. He's like, this seems inauthentic, but it was completely authentic.
Oh, completely.
No, see, those were my favorites just because of that throwback old Nick at Night feel. I mean, that's the stuff that I know the best, you know, again, from spending so much time at my grandma's.
Yeah, fair enough. That was my day off from school because I was sick, or most of the time pretending to be sick, that watched The Price is Right and a couple of game shows, a little bit of daytime talk show, and then there was like Adam's Family, Munsters, Beverly Hillbillies, I Love Lucy, The Honeymooners, Dick Van Dyke, of course, Mary Tyler Moore Show. That was all the stuff that was playing on non-cable. It was all the reruns of everything, so I just grew up watching that stuff. So I definitely loved seeing that really beautiful homage to that, you know, generation of sitcoms.
Definitely.
And we are going to get into that, and also just kind of what a game changer in some regards this series was of WandaVision on Disney Plus that just concluded its first season. This is the first Disney Plus Marvel show that they've released. We're talking about all 9 episodes. spoiler heavy. So if you have not finished that season, I would suggest going, checking that out, and coming back if you want to avoid any kind of spoilers. Because we're getting down and dirty on this episode of Geeks Under the Influence, episode 207, WandaVision.
Real things that were and shall be again. A changing of the guard, the dead's marching in. You think you can hold out, but you know you're wrong. So you better join us now. You better do it fast or you will be. Necronomicon uses power to rise from the dead. You play the tape, our blade begins to spread. You can fight all you want, but you need to resist. We're here to take the world and move with an iron fist. So join us or die. Join us or die. Or I will swallow your soul. Necronomicon gives us power to rise from the dead. You play the tape.
Woo!
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 The worst part of waiting to the end of a season to do an episode on it is the fact that, especially when it's releasing one a week, is being used to having this podcast as kind of a sounding box for like all your opinions and views and excitement over something, and just having to wait over 2 months to like unload. It's like edging. It's like geeky edging. Just like you're almost there and you can't release yet. It's just so bad.
So much fan theory just coming out of the tip of your dick. Just, I've got so many fan theories right now.
I'm a cis white male. Instead of blood, it's just opinions coursing through my body. So,
well, I mean, like me, Lowdown, and, you know, a couple other guys we're buddies with. I mean, we're like Charlie in the mailroom with red strings running all right. over, you know.
Oh, seriously. Here. It was crazy. It was just like, oh, they're this, and then there's this. And we were right on a couple things, though.
We were right on a couple things that I think are on the way.
Well, yeah. And that's something we will be talking about on this episode, is how so many people were disappointed with the series because of what they assumed was going to happen and didn't happen, which is just, that's a relatively new phenomenon with Twitter and then social media. People, not because it sucks, but because it didn't do the thing they thought it was going to do, they think it sucks. That's just weird. But before we get into that, let's talk about who's on this panel about WandaVision. First up, an old friend of mine that I've done stand-up comedy with. We've done Booze Clues together, smacked my pitch up. We smacked a pitch so hard that his version of a Predator movie ended up being basically the same plot as Jiu-Jitsu starring Nicolas Cage. It came out like a year after we recorded it, or not, like 6 months after. So you talk about nail on head, except I don't think you casted Cage in your version.
Nothing new under the sun.
Tondi is here to join us on this conversation about WandaVision.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, man. I saw that your podcast, My Handle is Jonathan Blade, you recently released an episode that was, at least the title was relating to WandaVision a little bit.
Yeah, that was for SEO.
Yeah. Is it with Wanda Voltron, I think was the name of the episode?
Yeah, I wanted to do a Voltron episode, but nobody's going to listen to an Voltron episode. So I talked a little bit about WandaVision, a little bit about Nomadland and Coming to America and some other stuff, but it's a Voltron episode.
So you did a little bit of a bait and switch there. I was like, oh, WandaVision? No, sorry. Afraid not.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Hey, I mean, that's smart. And also, people should want to listen to a Voltron episode. Just saying.
That's true. Next up, we've got a returning panelist that has not been on for years, I believe.
Time is weird. I don't know. You tell me.
Dude,
I think it was like the X-Men episodes that we were doing that you were on. I forget how long ago
it was.
It was
Marvel related. That's my wheelhouse.
Yeah. I know you brought a bunch of goodies that, yeah.
I did it again.
Yeah, he always has some nice goodies for us to look at. Some amazing comics and collector's items that we get to pore over whenever we see him. Trey Vanneman's here to talk WandaVision and also a lot of the tie-ins to the comics, you know, where some of these ideas came from. I've read into a little bit of that. Interesting to see how the Marvel Cinematic Universe is kind of stitching together a bunch of different storylines to work together. Not the first production company to do that. The first one to actually make it effective. If anyone remembers X-Men 3, where it was the Cure story.
Joss Whedon's The Cure,
along with the Phoenix Saga. Two incredible stories on their own right that could be trilogies on their own, mashed into one stupid movie.
Stop. Please. Ugh.
So it's interesting to see Marvel doing it, but taking just enough of that special sauce from each storyline to work together.
I mean, taking their time with it as well. I mean, that's the key. I mean, and they're playing chess with this stuff. I mean, Kevin Feige, I guess I'm saying it right.
Yeah.
I mean, having one, I think having one person as the shot caller is absolutely key. Having a showrunner for the entirety of the project.
Sure.
But two, I mean, they're laying out, you know, things that they're going to revisit years and, you know, movies or shows down the road. I mean, and it's just, I mean, subtle things, big things, but taking their time with it and doing it right is, I think, part of the magic they're doing.
And it was interesting to see in WandaVision how they were setting up characters that it's possible you'll see them in the movie universe that this is all direct connected to, but they're clearly direct villains for the character that is in that series. Like Agatha is clearly set up to be Wanda's like counterpoint, along with some hints to Mephisto, or I think that was more just fan theories with Mephisto. I don't think there was really anything.
No. No, I got a lot to say about
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Yeah. About Silver Surfer, Mephisto. Oh, God, Fantastic Four. Woo! Oh.
Yeah, I just, you know, there's no movie universe. It's just Marvel. It's all Marvel. That's the beautiful thing. So, whatever they do with Captain Marvel, she's my Captain Marvel. Whatever they do with Monica Rambeau next, could be a movie.
Yeah.
It's going to be another TV show because she's going to be in a Nick Fury show. But it doesn't matter. It's all part of one cohesive group, and that is beautiful. Something that has never been done before.
But
that's what's got me excited.
There are characters like Monica Rambeau who play, well, she was a couple different names in the comics, but Spectrum, I think, is her most recent name in the comics. That is a character that I think will be one that we see in the movies, along with Captain Marvel. That character is big enough and powerful enough that it makes sense that that would be played with as a new Avenger in the movies.
Absolutely. I mean, I got excited about it during Captain Marvel because, I mean, that was her in it. You know, her mama was Carol's wingman. You know, so I mean, that I think it's interwoven, and it's a good way to introduce her, like grown up and stuff, and then re-entry into it.
Sure.
I like that the shows, you know, interact with the movies, and it's consistent. So, like when Nick Fury pops up on S.H.I.E.L.D., it's Sam Jackson. You know, whereas in DC, you've got how many different people playing the Flash? I mean, how many Supermans we gone through?
Yeah.
I'm stoked with Michael B. Jordan. But, you know, it's the consistency, which, again, I think is part of a multifaceted, like a lot of good things coming together.
Yep.
They're doing it right.
Speaking of good things to come together and wingmen, person that helps me out with this entire network and my counterpart on this show here, the sexual chocolate, Mr. Lowdown Brown MacGyver is here.
What's up, everyone? Are you saying we come together? Is that what you're saying?
Around the same time. We don't always like at the same exact time, but pretty close most of the time. Yeah.
I think it's lovely.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. How they've changed, how they've pulled stuff together, but also altered it a little bit just to make it work for the story. They've done that throughout all the movies. I mean, there's always been, you know, like people bitched about Civil War. Because it wasn't everything. Well, A, they didn't have the rights to everyone, but also B, you can't do that series in a fucking movie.
No.
It's too much. It's too much.
That's its own 22 movies right there.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I was about to say the exact same thing. Yeah. You can't take, you know, God knows how many, you know, decades we've done of Marvel and fit it into even the 10-year span that they've done, you know, MCU on. I mean,
that's a whole other three phases, like just doing Civil War.
Yeah.
But anyway, people bitched about it, you know, and like there's a couple things with this that was like Agatha actually teaches Scarlet Witch, but in this is the way it ends, you know, you don't really see them, they're enemies. So like how is she now, where is she gonna go learn from? So that's another thing.
There was the dark hold at the end, the like end credit scene where she was like flipping through the dark hold. It separated herself into two different versions of her, and one version was like reading the dark hold and the other one is like sipping fucking coffee next to her the most picturesque cabin I've ever seen in my entire fucking life, with like a babbling brook going around it. Yeah, fuck off. I wish that's where I went, because I fucked up and like brainwashed an entire town and I felt guilty about it. Let me go to the babbling brook house. Yeah, that's my punishment. Fuck.
Well, you know, you two can rent the Thanos house for just $5.99 a month.
Yeah, right. It's all these villains enjoying like fucking like casually picking fruit and then like hanging out in their nice like country cabin. Jesus.
Well, did you also notice that, or one, I think I got to go back and rewatch it, but most of the time we watched when Dr. Strange was doing the astral projection, you know, while he's sleeping and reading, or when he was on the operating table, his body was unconscious in some way, shape, or form, and his astral projection was going about his business. She's up and moving around while still doing it and flipping through the darkhold. Plus, on the second time I watched it, did you catch she picked up the teapot with her bare hand?
Mm-hmm. I did not notice that.
Yeah, I didn't notice it the first time, but it's just like, yo, you don't feel that?
She's working on a different level at this point.
Tangentially, I don't know how much of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. you guys watched, but
all of
it. Remember that the Darkhold was part of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. storyline?
Oh, yeah, Bobby Reyes, Ghost Rider, took it to hell, so I want to know if they're going to tie that in. How the fuck did Agatha get it? Seriously, dude, because if they tie that shit in, that is awesome, because literally, Ghost Rider was like, I'm going to take it back. And then
when the Darkhold got a glow up for WandaVision too, it's not the same looking thing as Agents of
S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, I mean, okay, you're going from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to a Disney production.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had like cardboard money for the Darkhold. And
well, I mean, well, it was Robbie Reyes. That was the version of Ghost Rider they were doing. But did you see where they found the Darkhold initially with the stuff on the back of the walls? The shack they found it in?
Yeah.
It had a deconstructed Harley and circus posters. That was Johnny Blaze's garage.
Huh.
Oh, that's
right. Okay.
And aren't they bringing out a Johnny Blaze story series or something? Isn't that supposed to happen, too?
Maybe.
I haven't heard about it.
Not, I mean, I know that
I thought there were teasers of Ghost Rider Johnny Blaze.
There are conversations. In a series. There are rumors.
I mean, I'd be fine if they kept it rolling with Reyes, because I mean, I thought he did a good job, and I mean, we already did the new Nick Cage thing. I want to say Luke.
Oh God, no, we yeah, can do
yeah
a
exactly.
With that.
So let's. Jesus. I don't know. I mean, I'd be cool with Reyes.
No, I would be too. I was just curious because that'd be a good way to tie in the Darkhold too.
Well,
like everything is all encompassing, is what I'm saying.
Everything that I've read, they are planning on doing the Johnny Blaze storyline. There's discussion. Of course, Nicolas Cage has come back saying that he would love to reprise the role. And everyone's like, yeah, that's cute. You go make a Mandy sequel.
I'll watch the shit out of that.
No,
though.
I mean, I would. Like, he already did the Robbie Reyes version of Ghost Rider with Drive Angry. Like, you can just do your own thing. But there also is talk that Keanu has been approached multiple times from Marvel about playing a role. And there was discussion that might be one of the roles that he's centering in on is Ghost Rider.
But with the Keanu Reeves, man, I think he would make a very good Norrin Rad, because he's done like the whole kind of emotionless wooden alien thing before. Sure. And pulls it off. And I could also see him as Namor, I'm dying for that.
Namor would be a good call. Yeah, Namor would.
It sucks that Boseman passed away, because I wanted the War of Two Kings.
Yeah, well, I thought some of what I read said that it was rumored that he was going to be Namor. Keanu Reeves was.
I'm sure there's a few
but
roles.
He would
that
also make a
about.
Good Silver Surfer. Think about it. That
true.
He really would make an awesome surfer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I've seen for Namor is there's a sexy young Asian actor whose name I can't call off the top of my head, but that's who has consistently been presented for that character going forward. And I would love to see that. I think that would be tight.
Do you remember what they've been in? Like to maybe jog one of my
I do not remember what they've been in. I just remember the dude is sexy. They keep showing his face, and I'm like, oh yeah. That'd be great, because Namor has a
air about him. Right?
Exotic is not really a good word to use in 2021, mm-hmm. But
Namor has that kind of like, well, that I'm probably an asshole presence, along with kind of like that like slightly inhuman feature. Yeah, and slightly inhuman feature, like the Tilda Swinton look thing going for it, where it's like all the stuff's there in the right places, but there's something almost alien about the way everything's put together.
Everything about Namor is dickish. I mean, right out the gate, he's like, I'm gonna screw Reed Richards, girl. Fuck you,
Right? Mm.
But anyway, we need a hard turn back into WandaVision, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
No smoothness there. Just right back in.
Well,
but yeah, they did come out of the gate hard. I know that people were like, oh, it's slow. And I actually heard this from people that are like relatively in the same age group as us who did grow up with those shows, and I'm like, you don't see what they're doing. Like, you don't, like, I get if someone in their 20s is saying it's boring, because they've seen fuck all Dick Van Dyke and and the Brady Bunch, right? They never seen that, or Bewitched, they've never seen that. But I don't know. I just, if you're around the same age, I just assume you'd understand what they're doing, and they're trying to make it's an alternate reality. She's taking reality and making her own reality, and she's making it like this, and they actually explain it further along. You think people would have stuck with it longer? That's all. I don't get that.
Well, I think it is. I mean, I wouldn't even say that it's suffering from it. It's fine.
It's perfectly fine.
It's doing well. They aren't worried about the numbers with this show. I mean, I'm not talking about it like this has really suffered for the way that they approach it. No, it's fine. I think it is challenged with people being used to seeing these characters in a like 2 or 3.5 hour movie format as opposed to weekly. So that tonal shift, with it still feeling a little bit Marvel, you know, with the Marvel shows that were on Netflix, they had a very tonally different kind of approach to the characters. So it felt clearly separated between the Marvel movies and those shows. Whereas WandaVision, it does have its own tweaks to it, its own kind of feel, but it is still very much in that universe as well. So it could definitely be a challenge for some people to kind of shift gears a little bit and not have all the answers in the first episode, you know, that they have to just take it as what it was and just be confused by it and then wait a week. And people are just impatient now.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. And yes, I mean, this show is definitely linked to the movie. It's like it just came right out of that, and now we're going to give you a little 30-minute segment of a Marvel movie. And I love that. I love that now they're connected, right? But also, people say they're used to seeing them, these characters, in 2, 2.5 hour long movies, but how much of that movie was that character? You're actually getting a condensed down of all their scenes,
sure,
and you see them continuously now in the show versus seeing them over 2.5 hours in little like 2 minute scenes.
But there were no splodies in the first episode.
I think that the big problem people had is that WandaVision intentionally fucked with people.
Oh yeah.
So people had their fan theories, and WandaVision fed those fan theories and then intentionally did not do anything related to those fan theories.
I
think that got a lot of people like seriously pissed off. Didn't bother me personally. I thought that was fun, but yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
I mean, honestly, I'm pleased for two different things. One, with us coming out of lockdown, everybody still being high and tight about, you know, pandemic, we get to watch Marvel without going to the movies, because we're not going to the movies. And two, it gave us, I mean, how much social time did you spend in person, texting, whatever, on the internet, talking to people about the theories? I mean,
sure.
that alone, yep. I mean, this was the biggest, you know, whodunit game or Easter egg hunt I've ever had with a show, man. I've had a blast this season.
I couldn't even count the amount of texts in the thread we got going on. Just countless.
Yeah.
It's insane. But it's just all these theories, because the universe is so vast with these characters, and we don't know what they're going to do, because they can pull from like pretty much any one of the different story arcs and make it work, because they're just that fucking good at it, right? But also, you're right. I mean, you know, coming out of lockdown and how fucked up Hollywood and filming has been due to this. I remember when I put on episode one, and I'm willing to bet a fucking paycheck that everyone felt the same. When you first saw the intro screen, did it not hit you that it had been over a fucking year since you had seen that? Out of the last 10 years of your life where saw it 2 or 3 times a year?
Yep.
Dude, I almost fucking teared up. I'm not even kidding. I almost fucking teared up. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't seen this in a year. Like, year and a half.
I've been working remotely. So on Friday when it came out, I, on my lunch break, was like, cool. Well, I know what I'm watching on my lunch break. And made a little sandwich and sat down. And it didn't really click with me that I was about to watch a Marvel property, like in the pure giddiness that I get from doing that, until that screen. And then
yeah,
it was
exactly.
Like all of a sudden I was that 12-year-old kid freaking out again, you know, with my little sandwich ready to watch my Disney Plus superhero show. And
it had been a year and a half. You had Endgame and that was it. So 2019 summer to January of 2021, we did not get that intro on anything new. It just hit me really hard, like, holy fuck, I've been living with this since 08,
right?
Yeah, COVID wasn't good for anybody, but it was, I think, even with that year of loss, it was great for Marvel because people were complaining about being burnt out after Endgame, and it was a perfect stopping point to take a break for their properties.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Man, I want it. I want it bad. I want it in my arm.
Right.
I mean, and saying burnout after Endgame, which is valid too. I mean, it's just the same conversation I've had with I don't know how many people about Star Wars, where, you know, it's like we've all gotten burnout on the Star Wars movies. and then Mandalorian. So going from big movie to show, doing it in small segments, taking your time, dealing with, I don't know, more minutia, it was refreshing. So
that's true.
Now, one thing that I wanted to talk about is auxiliary characters before we get into the break. We're getting a little bit close now. Jimmy Woo and Darcy are returning.
Yeah.
Jimmy Woo, you remember from the Ant-Man movies. He's coming back and being fleshed out more as a character, which I love. I think he was a fun character in the Ant-Man movies. And then, of course, Darcy, she was in
Thor?
Well, the first two Thor movies.
Was she in the first one?
Yeah, she was the first one.
I don't rewatch that one that much, so I don't.
Well, it's his eyebrows. They mess with me. don't bleach him worth my eyebrows. It's just
the blonde eyebrows.
It's
distracting. I like my craft beer Thor, any version of Thor, but not bleached eyebrows Thor.
Fair enough.
But Darcy though.
Cat Dennings. Yes. My. Holy crap.
What an actress.
So I'm so great okay chops. With Cat Dennings being more regularly part of the cinematic universe or in the shows. Fuck. I've just kind of assumed that Jimmy Woo and Darcy are going to be the new Coulson characters that are kind of interconnecting everything together.
Yeah.
Which those two are actively campaigning the MCU to make their own spinoff show that's kind of like their version of the X-Files, which I am so okay with.
Oh, fuck. Oh, yeah.
That would absolutely
a lot of fun that would be.
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh dude, because that would be like the Marvel version of if you mixed X-Files and Truth Seekers. That's what would
absolutely.
Be.
Absolutely.
It would just be this awesome kind of serious, but also just goofy as fuck shit. I'd love every second of it.
Well, like She-Hulk is supposed to be Marvel meets Boston Legal, which I'm very okay with.
Really?
Yeah, well, it's supposed to have a lighter heart to it, and it's also arguably giving us the option of seeing Matt Murdock in the courtroom against Jennifer Walters.
So are they going to get Charlie Cox back for that?
Oh, that's the rumor. I don't know if it's confirmed, but
that makes me happy.
I know that D'Onofrio is in talks with him, too.
Oh,
I know. Yes.
Well, if they're doing a Boston Legal style show, could they just bring James Spader back? Could they do that for me? Could they bring James Spader back?
Oh God, he just got Ultron's head. You know.
Yeah, he just walks in randomly and like he's got like an Ultron mask. Like, just kidding.
Okay. Oh, that'd be amazing. That'd be so good.
I mean, we're getting Harvey Birdman on this, but I'm okay with that too.
Right. But you know, that being more of a lighthearted, like legal show type of approach with She-Hulk. And WandaVision being this love letter to the sitcom in its first season. And Falcon and Winter Soldier feeling a lot more like the classic Marvel movie, like the Captain America adventure, fight the bad guy kind of film. It's a reminder that that's how Marvel was able to stave off for 10 years the people getting tired of these movies, is that the movies themselves had a totally different feel while still feeling like a Marvel movie. I mean, Winter Soldier was straight up a like political thriller, like All the King's Men. I mean, it was
the best.
And then Ragnarok, nothing like Winter Soldier. You know, like there's so much difference in even though they feel it part of the same universe.
No, absolutely. You know, I mean, but even before, because Ragnarok's arguably in my top three.
Oh man, yeah.
Winter Soldier's up there. But when Guardians first did it, and they came out, and it was all about the soundtrack and. I guess disciplinary problem version of the Avengers. They're not so awesome. They're just kind of awesome.
Well, they're more like the Indiana Jones type of hero, where like Indiana Jones always accidentally succeeds at the stuff he's
Bruce
doing.
Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis. Bruce the same Willis. Deal. Where he'll just happen to like land on a thing the right way to like knock a thing over to kill a Nazi or something. You know, it's just this
Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, 100% Mr. Magoo type of action hero.
So it was Indiana Magoo. Is that
Indiana Magoo.
Magoo's first name? Indiana Magoo.
Now I want that.
That's also for now the name of the episode. But that's the Guardians of the Galaxy. Is they're like inexplicably heroes somehow? Like they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
They shouldn't.
Well, this is like Firefly heroes. Kind of.
It's just like everybody looks at them like, wait.
The reluctant heroes. They don't like. They didn't want to be heroes. They kind of fell into it. You know what I mean?
But we're still rip and run.
Exactly.
And then you've got the actual Avengers when they're firing on all cylinders, which is rare. But when it does happen that way, they're amazing. They're Earth's Mightiest Heroes, you know. And so it was fun to see them playing in the same space during the final Avengers movies as well. But they definitely feel different enough that you're not going to get bored with one just because you watched the other one, you know. And
Yeah.
And that's why I was surprised when there was blowback from WandaVision. Like, people were like, this doesn't seem the same. Have you been paying attention at all over the past 10 years?
And it was also coming from, as was stated previously, the same people that were saying they were getting burnt out after Endgame. And it's like, wait a minute. So the first show that was slated to drop was Falcon Winter Soldier, which would have pretty much been the same tone as like Endgame and Infinity War and like an Avengers sure. movie, or at least a Captain America movie. So same thing. Because of COVID, it actually helped this, and they put out a show that was completely left field mm-hmm. to what they were going to release with, and you're still bitching. It's yep. like, just shut the fuck up. Like, just shut the fuck up.
But also, at the same time, I'm expecting slightly different in a way we haven't seen, well, kind of seen it, but more, you know, focused on, is the whole, like, buddy cut, like, Lethal Weapon, like, Murtaugh.
Oh, I'm totally
like,
thinking Lethal
like
Weapon,
each
dude.
Other, yeah. But we don't like each other, but we're going to really like
hours.
Each other later. I mean, because they already kind of, sort of, frenemies.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting more Winter Soldier, actually. I'm expecting a TV show that's like what I'm expecting from Black Widow, what I got from Winter Soldier, which is my favorite of the MCU movies. I'm excited. A lot of people are not excited because it looks like more of the same. I am very excited for Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I'm agreeing with everything. I don't agree it's going to be the same, but the way it was portrayed in the trailers, and when you hear those names together in a show, initial reaction was like, okay, we're going to get more of that. And I think we are going to see them getting along a little bit better because, I mean, we saw how they were at the end of Endgame, where,
sure.
you know, Falcon held up the, you know, he was, and Bucky's like, no, you go. Like, Bucky was like, no, you, this is you. And I just feel like, I think it's going to be like you said, like a Lethal Weapon, 48 hours kind of feel where it's just going to, they're going to talk shit, like heavy shit, but they're also always going to have each other's back and basically be brothers from now on. And I don't know what other tone they could go with that, but maybe they'll surprise me.
Well, I want to agree with Tondi, though, that more of the Winter Soldier, a second helping of like the espionage, S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra,
Yeah.
Black Widow stuff. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
That's not like rinse and repeat because, you know, it did good the first time. That's a good thing. I mean, having yes. a second mm-hmm. helping of that aspect of Marvel is definitely okay.
I'm interested to have our listeners hear us talking about what we expect from Falcon and Winter Soldier right before it comes out, and then listen back to this episode after it's over with and see just how tragically we were wrong on everything.
Yeah.
But I do think, yeah, there will be a little bit of that that buddy cop kind of feel, but I think it also will be a little bit of that, like, Annie, get your gun, like, anything you can do, I can do better kind of vibe to it as well, is that mm-hmm. all the people mm-hmm. that were losing their fucking minds about Falcon getting the shield at the end of Endgame, I think they're going to understand that it's not, he might be the one that it was given to, and he's, like, in line to be the next Captain America, but I think they're both going to be using the shield, they're both going to be working together, they're going to be almost like trying to one up one another on a regular basis in a playful competition kind of way. Can't see how they wouldn't have that kind of vibe between the two of them.
All about it.
Yeah.
Can't wait. But we got more WandaVision to talk about.
Yeah, no, true. And
now for Loki.
Yeah, right now let's get into Loki.
Yeah, we've got Loki. Jesus.
Real quick before we get a break, that there is another organization that was officially appearing in the MCU. With WandaVision, that is sort of a replacement to S.H.I.E.L.D. And also a organization that made its first appearance in the X-Men comics. So I believe it was the Joss Whedon run of the X-Men that created S.W.O.R.D. Yep.
There we go.
There it is. The Astonishing X-Men. Yeah.
Yep.
Was the
look at you.
The appearance of
S.H.I.E.L.D. No, hold up. No, Tondi. That's all first appearances for WandaVision right there.
Oh, my.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, for those listening, Trey held up and showed us the size of his stack.
His package.
I'm very proud of the size package. Of my stack.
Well, that was about, what, 15 long, I feel like?
Yeah.
Like 15 wide.
You might want to stand back. This is something I'm particularly right. proud of. Excuse me while I whip this out.
This out, yeah.
Now, for those unfamiliar with S.W.O.R.D., and I think the abbreviation stands for something different in the show than it does in the comics, basically, S.W.O.R.D. is the cosmic version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, so S.H.I.E.L.D. is domestic threats, whereas S.W.O.R.D. is foreign threats, so anything non-terrestrial.
Yeah, basically. So,
and it didn't just first show up on WandaVision. That actually was in the end of Spider-Man Far From Home.
Home, yeah.
When you saw Nick Fury on the space station with the Skrulls, that was the Sword Station. Yep. Which, you know, skipping ahead, that was part of the extra credit scene when they were talking to Monica about he wants to see you up there.
Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Burned to Fury. I think that was pretty blatant.
That was badass. Yeah, no. Oh, God.
That's like one of those.
Which incidentally is also my main pick for a lead-in for the Fantastic Four, because if they're working for S.W.O.R.D., that's already got them up there close to cosmic radiation. Go.
Mm. Right.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, that S.W.O.R.D. is such a perfect setup for the Fantastic Four. You've got a space station. Done.
I just want a good Fantastic Four. I just want, like, pretty much arguably the most important team in the MCU. Can I get a good Fantastic Four, please? Thank you. Jesus Christ.
Okay, just because they're the first family doesn't make them the most important. I don't know.
When have they not shown up at any of the original Crisis, like across the board,
Well, I mean, they kind of reestablished how important at least Reed is when Reed recreated the universe. So I love the Fantastic Four. I became a fan when John Byrne was the writer of the book. Loved Chris Claremont's run. Loved Walt Simonson's run. So I'm a big fan, but yeah, they're important.
Yeah.
They're important, and I'm not going to argue that. I dig them on a lower level in my greater Marvel stuff, but most of the time when you get those big multi-book, every character crossovers, it's like you don't really need Sue or Ben or Johnny. It's just like, oh, we need a big brain, and you know we already got Stark, and Riri Williams isn't here yet, so get Reed Richards in here. Great, you invented a machine. It's like having Cypher on your team. You translate that. Okay, cool, man. No color in the corner, man. We're going to go fight. You know, we don't really need you.
All right, that's a good place for us to take our break. We're going to be back in just a minute with more conversation about WandaVision and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as well as a little bit of what we're drinking and making a drunken scene or two. So stick around. We'll be back in just a minute.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-Wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
Hey guys, Scotty Big Daddy Preston here. That's right, the Geek Father, asking you to join me here every other week with friends and family of the GUI Network as we go through all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent. So remember, join us or cry.
In a world ravaged by movie studios that keep rehashing the same things, only one podcaster has the guts to make it even worse. Join Mike the Hobbit as he traverses the internet to bring you some of the best and worst ideas for reboots, remakes, and reimaginings of some of your favorite and least favorite TV and film properties. Ideas like a John Waters He-Man movie, Fantastic Four the musical, and Aliens done entirely with marionettes. What podcast would bring this evil upon the world? This is Smack My Pitch Up. Available anywhere you get your podcasts.
We're back for the second half. Geeks Under the Influence, all things WandaVision. Talking about the series, all 9 episodes, and its effect on the cinematic universe, and other ideas on what we think will be coming from the Falcon Winter Soldier and Loki and what have you following WandaVision. But first, before we get into that, we're going to be talking about our sponsors, the ones that will allow us the booze and the equipment and the storage for this wonderful show. First off, of course, is Amazon.com. You know it. You have mixed feelings about it, just like us, and that's reasonable. But if you want to feel better about using Amazon during this weird time, go to GUIpodcast.com, click on the link in the upper right-hand corner to shop Amazon that way, and we get credit for anything that you purchase. So a little bit of what you spend at Amazon, we get to keep instead of Amazon. So if you want to feel better about your Amazon purchases, know that some of it is going to your favorite geeky podcast and not to the money grubbing hands of Jeff Bezos. Fuck that guy. Amazon.
Perfect.
Next one up, of course, is TeePublic for all of your Geeks Under the Influence Network product needs. We've got a ton of designs available on our site there. We just actually added one today that is Tucci Gang, and it's an illustration of Tucci, Stanley Tucci with Tucci Gang over top of it. Very cool design. Deeply Upsetting just released one that said Kyles are temporary, but horses are forever, in a bright pink shirt and an illustrated horse with a center part. Always new designs coming out on the website. Just go to gypodcast.com/store for the link to our TeePublic store, or just go to gypodcast.com and click on the store link, and then I'll send you directly as well to our TeePublic store. Also, during the pandemic, all of the money that we get from TeePublic sales, we are donating to the Holly Fund, a local fund, a nonprofit that helps out the restaurant workers in the Richmond area. So it's a way to, in addition to what you should be doing already, which is ordering takeout, and eating at places where you feel comfortable eating, donate money as well to the Holly Fund. Or if you want to get something and also help out the Holly Fund, just order anything from the Geeks Under the Influence store on TeePublic. All of our profits we are donating until we get out of this weirdness that we're in and restaurants can return to their full form again. So help out the restaurant industry, get some GUI merch, and everybody's, well, less sad. I don't know about happy, but less sad. So TeePublic. Now we are getting into our second half here of Geeks Under the Influence. And the thing that really fuels us more than our geekdom oftentimes is often the booze that we're imbibing. And we talk about that on a segment called What We're Drinking.
Hey, we're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey,
we're drinking. We're getting drunk.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it. I do have a drink myself that I have been enjoying over the past week. Is the AHA brand sparkling seltzer, and this is the strawberry cucumber flavor mixed with vodka. So it's something that is without color, like vision, and is Russian as well.
Look at you.
So,
no.
There you go.
Yes. Aren't you fancy?
You know what shit I got for bringing White Claws to a recording and this motherfucker over here? Fuck off.
I will tell you, like, honestly, I just feel better when I'm drinking. I just feel
it's
better
called
when
no
I'm
sugar.
Drinking AHA sparkling seltzer.
It's called no sugar.
It's
no sugar.
Love that swill.
No sugar. No, I am chugging on two East Coast locals, Richmond locals, because, again, support your local businesses wherever you can.
Sure.
So I've got Final Gravity's Vienna Lager, and I'm fucking telling you, man, I've been drinking this for the last few months, and pretty much as soon as I saw they put it up on the tap list, and I actually did a side-by-side comparison, and I will take this over Devil's Backbones.
Really?
Nice.
I am not fucking kidding, dude. They've released this like Thanksgiving-ish time frame, and I've always gotten a crowler whenever I've picked up like a 4-pack of whatever their new release is for the week. And I happened to have buy a 12-pack of Vienna Lager from Devil's Backbone at one point, and I literally did. I drank that, and then the next beer I had was the Final Gravity one, and it's more flavorful to me.
Wow.
It's better.
Okay, I'm definitely going to have to try it out because I love the Devil's Backbone Vienna Lager. That's been a staple of my beer diet for years.
If it wasn't for COVID, you would have had this multiple times because they only sell it in crowlers, so it would have been a share by now.
Yeah, fair enough.
God damn it.
Okay, that's good to know. I've been wanting to head up towards there.
Yeah, dude, pick it up. Pick one up. It's like $11 for a crowler.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I just had one of Triple Crossings. They released a double dry hopped Falcon Smash.
Oh, okay.
I got a 4-pack of. And they double dry hopped it with Citra hops, which is all the fruity.
All the fruity.
Nice. Delicious.
Heck yeah.
Delicious.
I mean, I'm having a ice pick made with Tito's and sweet tea. I don't have a product endorsement. It's good.
Yeah.
I've had several. I mean, that's
when it comes to vodka, you don't really have to be too terribly picky, I don't think, when you're
vodka.
Mixing with something.
I mean,
I used to drink the crap out of Tito's.
I definitely got my picks, but you know, now, I mean, this is it tastes good.
Yeah, fair enough.
It'll get you drunk.
Yeah, right.
I believe the last time we had a mimosa shithouse Sunday, just the wife and I,
y'all got a
it
lot
was
of
on Tito's
going on in your drinking world.
Oh, yeah. But I believe it was Tito's. Yeah. Oh, you got to have different booze for different things, man. Like,
totally.
Different boozes, man, you know?
I also brought a beverage because I'm a teetotaler these days, but I knew I was going to be on the show for this segment. So in addition to my tea, I am drinking some Krabby's ginger beer.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
okay.
I've never had it before. I said, oh, that looks interesting.
It's tasty.
It's too sweet.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, hold on. Hold on. See, I agree with that, but see, the only time I've had Krabby's is when I've made the bourbon and ginger XL. So I actually use bourbon and the ginger beer, and then you add the bitters, and you still do a little bit of the lime juice, and it kills the sweetness. But you really get fucked up because you're not using ginger ale, you're using ginger beer.
That is
that's why I call
thing.
Them bourbon ginger XLs.
Well, I'm going to get diabetes, so that's being fucked up, right?
Getting
the diabetes.
Yeah, not the good fucked up, though.
I mean, now you're fucked up, and so is your bank account. But
you know, I do agree. Krabby's by itself is sweet. I think it was to offset the bitterness and spice from the ginger.
Yeah.
Because there's like actually a lot of ginger in there, as you can
tell. Yeah, I was expecting like a kick, but it's not so much a kick. It's just sweet.
Yeah, they probably... Most people don't like the ginger. When people actually have real ginger, they're like, "Oh my, oh ew!" I'm like, "Yeah, that's ginger."
I was talking about that recently. I do like the heat of a ginger beer, like when they're the really like spicy ginger beers. But I can't do multiple drinks with that. Like, it's I can't like have more than like one Jesus. Or two before it just being it's just too much. You know?
Yeah.
You've got to kind of mix it up a little bit. But nice. That's awesome. I need to get some ginger beer. I haven't had any in a while. But now we are on to our second part of the show, the second segment that shares with you ideas for alternate takes from scenes from the subject matter we're talking about in a little segment called Making a Drunken Scene.
Making a Drunken Scene.
All right, so for this one, this was pretty easy. We just picked a couple scenes from WandaVision for us to do. I decided that it made sense for us to do a scene from the first episode and a scene from the last episode of the show. So these are two short scenes from the beginning and end of this first season here. The first one, we've got, actually both of them, we've got Vision and Wanda in both roles. So is there anybody that wants to do the season one version of Vision or Wanda, or...
I'll be Vision.
You'll be Vision? Okay. And I can be Wanda for that one, or if somebody else wants to be Wanda for the first one?
No, I think it's typecasting on your part, but take the lead.
Okay, cool. I'm going to do Wanda for the season one, episode one version, and Tondi will be Vision. This is from the episode filmed before a live studio audience, so this starts with Vision.
Listen, about tonight.
Don't worry, dear. I have everything under control.
Oh, well, that's a relief. I must confess, I'm really rather nervous.
Nervous? What for?
Well, you know, darling, I still get a little tongue-tied.
Viz, after all this time...
There's an awful lot riding on this one, Wanda. If tonight doesn't just go so, I think this could be the end.
Well, it's just one night. There's no need to get dramatic.
Look, I think the best course of action is to impress the wife.
And I think the best course of action is to impress the husband.
Well, that's wonderful. Glad to know we're on the same page. Until tonight, then, my darling.
Until tonight.
All right. So was Vision basically like the old fucking dial-up from the 90s? Is that what his voice
was
supposed to be?
I smoked too many cigarettes in the 60s, and now I'm using one of the trachea.
Ah, okay. So that's still the robotic sound, but it literally sounded like the dial-up noise you get in your ear. When you were hitting on the internet, and I thought I thought
like
too far into
Catherine
that.
Catherine Hepburn and Uncle Remus.
Yeah, what you started getting a little southern at the end. You went from bluesy to southern.
Yeah, I was going for Tom Waits at the beginning of that, and then it started going a little bit like careful. Like, this is almost problematic. Like,
hold on.
Pull back. Hold on. Pull back. not what I'm going for.
I definitely get some Busker Scruggs there. Like, it didn't hit anything important.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, yeah. Yeah. All right, Trey. So to me and you, what do you want?
I'll take this.
All right.
All right. Wanda, I know we can't stay like this. But before I go, I feel I must know. What am I?
You, Vision, are the piece of the milestone that lives in me. You are a body of wise and blood and bone that I created. You are my sadness and my hope. And mostly, you're my love.
I've been a voice with no body. A body, but not human. And now, a memory made real. Who knows what I might be next?
Yay. Me.
That was a rough scene to fucking pick, Hobbit. I'm just saying, like, that, like it, in watching that show, that was a fucking hardcore scene, right? Am I wrong, guys?
No,
come on.
Like,
that was.
No, it's the real.
That was brutal. That was fucking brutal.
I was looking for the scene from episode 8. Nobody had transcribed enough of it to make it work, where he says that, what is grief if not love that
perseveres?
That perseveres?
Yeah, that was a good line.
Great line. But, I mean, the internet is losing their fucking mind over that line, and I thought it'd be fun to, I don't know, do a Tom Waits voice while delivering that line. So
yeah, it would be. And honestly, it's a good way to tie back into this is, could we just talk about, we talked about Wanda, you know, as far as fleshing, you know, her out and what they did with her character a lot in the first half, but can we just talk about what they did with Vision and how they carried his character as being a consistently learning AI in this, that, like, you 100% believe he's human, like, without a doubt. And that was fucking awesome.
Well, too, and showing what, you know, the you know, what is human, more human than human type thing. Like, remember when he's trying to leave the Hex and he's, you know, he's getting ripped apart and he's screaming out that there are people in there that need help. I mean,
no human would do
that's
that.
Why he could pick Mjolnir up, you know?
Yeah, right. No human, no actual human aside from like basically Captain America would do that.
Right.
Yeah. That's why Captain made it move just a little bit.
Well, not with
the squeak.
Little squeak.
Well, the interesting speculation that I've seen is that Vision literally is Wanda's conscience because he's a piece of her, so it would make sense that, and Paul Bettany killed it. He killed.
Oh, yeah.
They both killed it. But Vision represents Wanda's conscience, which is why he kept pushing back against what she was doing.
That's smart. I didn't think about that.
I do love that Paul Bettany in an interview brought up that there was like an actor that he's always looked forward to working with. Totally just trolling a little bit, but like just thinking it would be really funny when it comes out that that's who he was talking about. And then the internet was just like, it's Magneto, just like losing their shit.
Wait, what?
The internet was like, it's Magneto. It's gotta be Magneto. And like all these other like ideas on who it might be, Dr. Strange or whoever, and getting really fucking into it to the point where Paul Bettany was like, oh, like maybe I took that. Whoa. I shouldn't have made that joke, I think. But I do love that scene where they're talking about the boat that gets deconstructed and put back together.
The ship of Theseus.
Yes.
Oh, with the two visions. Yeah.
But the thing that
was clever
that they're talking about is that like both ships are and both aren't the actual ship. And I understand that is the conversation in that mental exercise. The thing is that between the two visions, only one actually has Vision's memories. Like the Vision that Wanda created is the version of Vision that she saw from her perspective and her understanding. He has no memories of what he was doing when he wasn't around Wanda, you know, like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's her projection of the Vision. So it's not equal just because he has like a recreated Mind Stone, which also that's interesting that she can actually just will Infinity Stones into existence.
It's Wanda. Anyway.
Yeah. But that being said, it's like there wasn't an equality there. It wasn't that he knew he had the mentality of Vision and the spectral Vision had the actual body. Like it was uneven. And I'm glad that the spectral version got his memories returned to him and not that they became one, because now he has his real memories. Like he remembers sitting on the couch being like, I don't do anything when I'm alone. I don't get bored. And just sitting there just silently in his room waiting for somebody to interact with him, you know, that I, but yeah, I was glad that it was just removing the firewall on him getting his memories back.
Yeah. I don't know that, and you're right, but I don't know that it matters that one Vision might be a little bit more Vision than the other, because they're still both not Vision. Even with the memories, it's like, if you transcribe all your memories to a computer, because the assets, the personality that makes Vision who he is, that's gone. the elements of Stark, the elements of Banner, of Ultron, of the Mind Stone are no longer there. So they're just memories. So even with those memories returned, we don't know who that person is going to be ultimately.
True. Well, I think it's also a call back to, you know, if you've read the comics, that when Ultron made Vision, part of it was Wonder Man.
Correct.
And then Wonder Man comes back to life, you know, then you had that dynamic, and Scarlet Witch was always kind of, you know, she's attracted to Wonder Man because a lot of what he was originally was the part she was in love with Vision.
And then
that weird love triangle thing. And, you know, they did have like the nod to that in, I think, the beginning of the second episode where you saw Grim Reaper's helmet in the walls when Vision phased through it. So I think it was just, you know, a little, but I thought about that with the whole, what, you know, what makes one of us more Vision than the other? It made me think of the whole Wonder Man part.
When with Wonder Man, wasn't there in that story, and I might be wrong, that Wonder Man had feelings for Wanda as well, and so Vision was wondering if his feelings for her came from Wonder Man or if they're ones that he had himself had.
That sounds vaguely familiar. Okay. I mean, it's been an age since I've read that story arc, but that does sound familiar.
Okay.
And I think that they did try to bring that into, as far as just Vision and questioning his actual feelings for Wanda, into WandaVision, because once he starts realizing, what was that, around episode 4, there's something that happens, and then like was it 5, 6, and 7, he's continually questioning, and then he tries to, you know, break out of the hex. And you get all these flashbacks moving forward in the last couple episodes, and they actually cut back to the newer Avengers bunker from like, you know, Civil War and forward, and you see there, like, they were like the two that were always there. And especially during after Sokovia and the Accords came out and how she was locked up, and Vision was there. Mm-hmm. And you really do see that as he was learning back then, he was actually learning feelings and emotions too. And so that he realized his feelings were real.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really cool scene to throw in there, because, you know, like, I just thought it was a good tie-in where in the comics, there was a point where he's questioning his feelings, but in the show, he kind of goes through the same thing because he realizes that his immediate reality isn't real. So then he starts to question everything else, but then he comes back to, no, my feelings are still real. Like, even though I'm, like, it's really fucking multi-layered of how, like, he's not actually real, but everything he's feeling is real because it's tied into Wanda because of the Mind Stone.
Well, that's...
You know, and so it's fucking crazy, man.
It was interesting that...
Fucking crazy.
He had already had that ship conversation with the other Vision, and then after that, he goes to Wanda, is like, yo, Wanda, what the fuck is this? Like, what am I?
What am I? Yeah, exactly.
What's going on here? Like...
Yeah.
And... then, of course, it's like a super, like, romantic kind of response, but I wish that...
Heart-wrenching.
I was like, a little bit, but but honestly, I do wish that Vision was just like, yeah, love, whatever. No, but seriously, like, how'd this happen? Like, magic, whatever. Like, what did you do? Like, just use, like, total logical approach where she's like, you're my fear and my pain, but mostly my love. And he's like, that... what are you fucking talking about? Like, how did you make my body?
Yeah, I think that kind of takes us into one of the most important parts of this conversation, which is that Wanda is a villain, and she's the main villain of this show.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Like, to an incredibly high degree, I was telling somebody on the internet the other day that, because they were a big Wanda fan, I was like, I'm a Wanda fan too, but Wanda's Kilgrave. Wanda is Kilgrave, except... with a much bigger reach, she's enslaved thousands of people as opposed to one person at a time. So she's like one of the greatest villains of all time.
That's pretty bad.
I agree.
And I think we're going to see multiple villains over this next phase of Marvel. But with the possibility of her being one of the bigger baddies, considering, I mean, I think up to this point, she is the most powerful thing we've seen in the Marvel Universe. She could have taken Thanos if she knew her scope.
Sure.
And had control over her powers. And I think
she's the first one that actually fucked with him.
Well, and everybody's speculating on how the mutants are coming in. And there's so many parallels to the House of M storyline that I think they can borrow from that very easily.
Sure.
With, you know, especially now that we've opened up the multiverse of her having a hand of bringing in mutants or creating mutants or what have you. I read an interesting one that I would slaughter if I repeated it, but it kind of the gist of it was between her and interaction with an Infinity Stone, you know, kind of like what makes the Inhumans, only, you know, with the Terrigen Mist.
Sure.
Maybe it had something to do with that, but I think she'll have a part of it that's something related to House of M.
You know, when they did the scene when Rambo came back out, you know, they said it altered her DNA. And again, this is coming because like people are texting as soon as that happens. And I'm like, mutants, we got mutants, altered DNA. And it's right. Like, how brilliant. This is what I was talking about Marvel. Like, how fucking brilliant. It's so easy. When she first goes in, you don't even think about that. You don't think about that. The fucking barrier is that Wanda's created is strong enough to alter your DNA, but it's changing everything that goes through. So of course it is, but you don't think about that. Oh, it's, oh God, fucking genius. Fucking genius.
Well, I also like the theory too, that, you know, mutants might be brought in by when Tony snapped his fingers, that because if you go back to, what was it, Age of Ultron, where he makes the comment, I want to build a shield around the world. So if we're going against the level of Thanos, maybe in Tony's mind, you know, well, if they're all, you know, they have more numbers that are superpowered, what if we did? And maybe the snap was the beginning of that.
That would make sense. Did anybody else feel, because I liked almost all the episodes, the Malcolm one probably the least because it focused on the kids, but did anybody feel that the origin story for Monica was kind of perfunctory? Like, why is she doing this stuff, and why is she doing it in this way? Oh, because we need an origin episode for this character.
Yeah. It felt very just kind of like shoehorned in, where there wasn't enough time given to it to really focus on, like, what her feelings are. She's talking about Captain Marvel in this very weird way where she may have some, like, bones to pick or just weird feelings about her, not explored at all, that just like, kind of left out in the open. Just a hanging chad out there of her emotions.
Maybe that's where Captain Marvel too.
True. But
yeah, and that's what I was thinking, is that we would get, you know, what that weirdness was, what the bad blood or whatever it is. But I agree. It was a little perfunctory.
It was. But I do think that because, you know, she was affected by the snap, right? And then when Tony did his thing, you know, she came back. So she wasn't around for all that. So, and Captain Marvel made one of the last big stands in Endgame. So now when we get the sequel to Captain Marvel, clearly she's going to be involved in that sequel, and we hopefully will get some answers to that. That's where I'm going with that.
But yeah, so I do have faith that they're going to, if, you know, there's been a couple missteps, like Amy and I are going through the cinematic universe right now. There's some movies she hasn't seen, and we're at Dark World, and that's where we were plowing through the movies, and we got up to Dark World, and it was like, yeah, we'll get to it. We'll come back to...
See, I was like that with the first... I'd rather watch Dark World than the first Thor.
I agree with Lowdown.
All day.
Loki is the best thing to come out of that. And yeah. Hiddleston's, like, the way he's evolved as a character, I'm looking forward to going back into bad guy Loki and watching him go the same route, a different route, whatever. Because, I mean, we're not getting the, you know, reformed good guy Loki. We're going back to villain Loki, but
yeah, and we're going back to villain Loki, but with Hiddleston's chops under his belt from being Loki for so long too.
Yeah.
Think we're actually gonna. So I like initially that was my problem, was when I saw what they did in Endgame, and I, you know, Disney Plus was already a thing that was coming out. I'm like, oh fuck, they're gonna now they have a way to bring Loki back because he escaped with the Tesseract, right? And I'm like, fuck. But I was thinking of villain Loki, which was back in first Thor and through, you know, part of Dark World.
Yeah.
And I don't want that Loki, but the Loki that he progressed through with the acting chops that Hiddleston brought to it. Mm-hmm. If we get that level of Loki, but as a villain, I am all for that. I am 100% for that. And that's me switching my stance on that show hard, because I was against Loki from the get when it was announced.
Yeah, don't bet against Feige. But speaking of villains, I think that what WandaVision did with villains was a little bit superfluous. Like, Agatha was fine. She was actually a lot of fun. She added a fun element to the show that it actually needed, because some of the comedy for the sitcoms wasn't really hilarious. It was true, except for the fact that it wasn't hilarious. It was very much like the sitcoms it was emulating.
Yeah, but then Catherine Hahn comes in like the fucking Kool-Aid man, like, hi, y'all! and just like huge presence.
She brought great energy.
Yeah.
But it distracted from the grief story that the show is actually about Wanda's actual villainy. And the same with Hayward was his name, the sword
Hayward,
agent or whatever.
Director.
Yeah.
The director.
Yeah. And he became ridiculous by the end of it.
Oh yeah.
But he was just a man doing his job.
He was almost,
which also made it more weird. It made it stranger.
I was thinking that he was going to walk into the Hex and he would end up with a handlebar mustache that he could twirl. Like, that's how cartoonish his villainy was. It's like, they won't even know. It was a bit much at points.
But I will say that there was things throughout the show, and I did pick up on, I think, as of episode 2, that did let you know that Wanda was the villain. Like, there were certain scenes that started to pop up where the music would shift and all the lightheartedness that was supposed to be the sitcom-esque side of it would go away, and there would be this hard music, and like, it was almost anxiety-driven music to let you know, like, no, this is actually the WandaVision you should be watching right now.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the part you should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
And they were very good at that, and I don't think people pay attention to the musical cues enough to realize the importance of what's getting ready to happen. But they were very smart with that, I think, from at least episode 2. I can't remember episode 1, but I know it started in episode 2. There were things that happened, and Wanda's like, what? And her reality started to break.
Yeah.
And then you'd hear that music, and
So, going back to the villain thing, though, I'm still holding, and, you know, I'm a Mephisto guy. And I think there's a lot of very good hints, and it plays as far as the storyline. And in my mind, it's the best logic ever, but I don't think we truly saw what villains were pulling strings. Cause I mean, with Agatha, super powerful witch, but I think to get to that level, you literally got to make a deal with a devil. I mean, not the devil.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got, you know, we could, you know, there's Dormammu, there's the Sith Lord. I can't pronounce his name.
K'Thon.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
You know, there's a possibility of Nightmare, which is big time possibility. But then with Hayworth, and I think, you know, with Marvel playing chess and working things, you know, 15 steps ahead, and with the way they set it up in the comics, plus we know we're getting this from the announcements, I'm not ruling out that he's not a Skrull.
Mm.
I'm not ruling out that there are many factions of Skrulls and that the Secret Invasion has already started. Because
Fair.
That's the way we found out in the comics, that all of a sudden somebody gets outed and you know, oh, shit, we're getting invaded. Well, guess what, man? You roll it back, and this one was a Skrull. Like, Wolverine was a Skrull for, like, 6 years real time, you know? I mean, which I think a lot of that was fixing some continuity problems they had with their writers. But with...
Yes, Kadru. Yep.
And, I mean, and Hayward's... I mean, because, I mean, the fact that he... Or, you know, he said to Monica Rambeau that she's grounded. They changed the W from weapons or worlds to weapons. Which she called him out on. I mean, once all of a sudden he gets into power, that, you know, he starts changing up the game, you know, and it's not looking to the stars. It's looking more terrestrial. And that's not what S.W.O.R.D. does. So with and then right at the very end, you know, there's a Skrull. So I think there's a little bit of tie in, and there's enough there that, you know, I don't look so crazy.
Yeah.
No, that actually all makes perfect sense, really.
Actually, the Skrulls was that was my big swing at a theory in the episode where Vision is talking to the neighbors and they're like, don't you know why we're here? And then with the S.W.O.R.D. involvement, I thought that they were there because S.W.O.R.D. had placed all these aliens within this area so that S.W.O.R.D. was controlling the Hex itself.
Ah, okay. Mm. I like that theory.
Well, I mean, with the Skrulls, I mean, you know, being a massive, massive, you know, space presence. I mean, they got a huge armada, a huge army. I think, you know, with an invasion of that level, it's going to be, okay, we need to know exactly what we're up against. We need to figure out how their weapons work, try and recreate their weapons, maybe Vision. And now it's like, okay, we've got one of these people that can do this. We don't even know what this is. So, I mean, if you can, you know, remove and replace someone from a high level position like that, where you could get out there, get boots on the ground, let's see how it works. Let's see if we can, you know, reverse engineer it. And if not, blow it the hell up and try and salvage the weapon I do know I want. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways of looking at it. But Hayworth, I don't think they would have thrown away a character like that in such an easy way without having something to revisit as to what his, we don't even know what his agenda was. Why was he such a freaking cockle? You know, yep. I mean,
that's we don't know. We never got that.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, if he's one of the bad guys in it, man, you know, Kat Dennings hitting you with a truck. I mean, come on, there's got to be more to it than that.
She could hit me with anything she wanted, really, and I'd be fine with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It ain't rough and fun.
You say that until you get hit by a truck.
You do know that that wasn't the original ending.
No.
They planned a much larger, more massive ending, and the ending where Kat Dennings hits Hayward with the truck was what they moved to after COVID had knocked out a bunch of the cast.
Ah.
So they had an ending that had the cat turn into a demon and the kids were involved and all kinds of stuff, and they had to scrap that ending.
Damn.
Yo, oh, cleavage and road rage, man. That sells.
Yeah, I mean, I'm good. I mean, as far as an alternative, cool. Like, that works. Before we get done here, I do want to, speaking of the kids, I do want to touch base on, we talked about Agatha, but the kids, the twins that in the comic books are, was it part of Mephisto's soul? Is that what it is that connects them?
For lack of a long, lengthy way of explaining it.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough. I mean, the short answer is, and that's what Wiccan and Speed are the two children.
Wiccan and Speed.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see what they do because it's yeah, of course you have the appearance.
of course. Yes.
I'm only slight, like a couple.
Before we get too deep, can we just talk about the amazingness that was the throwback to those fucking costumes?
Oh, absolutely.
In absolutely.
Like, I mean, Quicksilver's costume, her costume, Vision's costume.
I'm sorry. It was so ridiculous, but also awesome at the same time.
Oh, the final Scarlet Witch costume was
hot.
Oh, yeah.
So hot.
Yeah.
Fucking so fire. Hot. It was like seeing your hot neighbor from down the street at a fetish club. It was so incredibly hot.
Put it on a side-by-side with Fassbender's Magneto's costume, and there's a lot of similarities there. So I think that
I'm just saying,
Magneto or anything, but it was, I think, somewhat intentional. But yeah, hell yes.
Yeah.
One of the better costumes so far.
Yes. I'm impressed that they made the headdress piece look, like, reasonable, which, I mean, it's a headband you wear on the front of your face. That's dumb.
Yep.
Like, that is so... It doesn't protect any... It protects your hairline. Like, it doesn't do anything. And
keeps your hair out of your face so you can see the fucking scarlet people. Like,
okay, we can go on at length about what females wear in comic books as far as their battle attire. Yeah. I mean,
that's true.
You got on something the size of two postage stamps and some floss, you know? I mean, it's like, how much protection you getting here?
But the Halloween episode had more of what, in the comics, Scarlet Witch is wearing, which is like... It's like a rear spoiler on a car for her face, you know, is what she's wearing.
She's... I mean, just 1 second. Look at two of the costumes that are on this car.
Yeah,
man.
Oh, they're terrible. They're terrible.
I mean, what was a different time?
I mean, Visions was like shorts. Yeah, right. Basically shorts. He was wearing basketball shorts.
So, yeah, I'm glad to see that they figured out how to make that look correct, but also look good. Like, that you, if someone was walking down the street with that, I'd be like, yeah, that's not how you wear a headband, but also I'd be like, but you're making it work. It wouldn't.
I think you rock that, bro. Crown, maybe.
You get it.
Yeah, right. It kind of had a crown kind of thing going for it. But yeah, with the kids, I am interested because at the very end you can hear them yelling from like the abyss or something, you know. Okay, Trey knows.
I feel solid on this one. She's using the Darkhold. We just saw her open the multiverse.
Okay. So
she's thumbing through. Those weren't her kids. She's looking for a universe where her kids actually exist.
Oh, wow.
Just like when we saw Doctor Strange flipping through every possible variation of how to beat Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she was doing, only that was the first time the multiverse got opened up. That was your tie-in to Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's my take on it. That it's not...
Oh.
Yeah, she's not trying to bring them back to life because they weren't alive. They weren't real.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking for a universe where they are.
Damn.
And she can do that.
Fuck.
Damn. Yeah.
And so because we know that the Young Avengers are coming.
Yeah.
We know that we're going to have the next Hawkeye, you know, that's going to be like Kate Bishop, but you know, I don't know if it is Kate Bishop. There's the possibility. All right. So I've got a big theory about Kang coming, and I love the guy from Lovecraft Country that's playing him.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think that's going to be the only Kang. If you go back in comic history, Kang has many faces, many versions. And the TVA, I mean, that's their prime directive is basically keeping Kang from blowing shit
up. Yeah, we will.
Yes, we will. Owen Wilson's mm-hmm. running the TVA, but I also think Kang's already infiltrated the TVA.
Wait,
I mean, I've got a theory that the kid from, what was the second Iron Man that showed up at the funeral?
Sure.
If that's that could be played as Third. Iron Lad, and Iron Lad was also a version of Kang. I think we're going to get multiple versions of Kang. Kang was on the Young Avengers, so was Wiccan, so was Speed. I don't know. I mean, again, I'm Charlie in the mailroom, but I can see where that would play. In Doctor Strange 2, we've been confirmed that we're getting America Chavez. She comes from another universe, so that could be the same universe she finds Wiccan and Speed. They might have a different, it's not like a replacement Avengers team. Maybe they open up a universe where there is an Avengers team that's kids.
Yeah,
and they didn't have, you know, Steve Rock. We don't know, but we do know we're getting America Chavez. So that's my take on what she was doing with the Darkhold. She's looking for another universe where she can have a family.
That, I think, is probably, for me, the most sound theory on how the mutants come in is that just like CW Universe had, like, different universes that Supergirl was a different one from the mm-hmm. Arrowverse, and they made it work where it wasn't that hard for them to visit each other. You can totally have that with the X-Men. And then, especially when you're making multiverse crap happen, you can have them all join together in these major Avenger movie-type things.
Yeah, I mean, it's total sandbox. I mean, the next Spider-Man, I mean, we're going deep on Spider-Verse. I mean, that's where, you know, there's speculation about Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, sure. you know, possibility of, like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio popping up for 3 seconds as another Spider-Man. That's where we could get That's where we get Miles Morales in you know, I mean, when you start doing that, you know, it's just like the second Secret Wars where, you know, the Ultimate Universe dies. You know, Miles Morales comes over, Wolverine's son, who's hardcore, he comes over. I mean, it's total sandbox. I mean, at that point, it's just like, well, hell, what do we want to do? And we don't have to explain to each other, they're from another universe, whatever.
Yep.
Fuck it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where mutants came from with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. I mean, we can't have an origin story for literally every character. So fuck it. How about they're just born that way?
Yep.
I mean, not everybody's going to get bit by a spider or dumb enough to play with gamma radiation.
Right.
I mean, so just laziness and lack of ideas. Yeah. Fuck it, mutants. There we go.
All right. Well, that's a good place for us to end this episode. We're running a little long here. So thank you so much for sticking around and listening to our long diatribes about WandaVision and the Marvel Cinematic Universe and our ideas for the future and comic books and just about everything else under the sun. So this has been so much fun.
I know we didn't touch on every little thing that happened during WandaVision, but we I feel like we touched over the majority of the big points.
Look, we're never the show to go to hear about all the Easter eggs and all the insights on the thing. This is us sitting around just celebrating the stuff that we love and cracking jokes and having fun with it. So I hope you had fun being part of this conversation where we're getting into kind of the background of these characters and what we liked about the show and how it was different from the comic books. And, you know, that's always a good time for me. So I hope you enjoyed it as well. And we'll find you next time for another episode of GUI Nights next week, and then another episode of Geeks Under the Influence. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe, all the stuff you do for podcasts. Do for this one too. We could use more ratings on Apple. We could use more ratings on Podchaser. It helps us out. It helps other people that may not normally see the show see us in search results and stuff when there's more ratings. So we do appreciate it. Tell your friends. Buy our merch, and we'll find you next time. As always, join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, Hobbit.
Join us or die! Join us or die! Or I will swallow your soul!
GUIPodcast.com
They won't even know!